and welcome to the Permaculture Project this day, January 28th, 2012. Taking care of Earth, taking care of people, and sharing surplus. I'm your host, James Koswick, and it is a call-in show. And call-in numbers, we've got a toll-free, 888-627-6088. And you can also call in on 530-327-7602. And feel free to join in the discussion with questions or comments. I'll be posting different call-in lines throughout the show in case anybody's listening out there. Hey, last week, I just want to do a little recap. Last week, our guests were Bill Wilson of Midwest Permaculture, Sandy Cruz of High Altitude Permaculture, Kyan Dillenberger of Raw Television, and Dr. Christopher Rudy of Cosmic Love Radio. And Dr. Rudy is going to have a show a couple hours after this one, and his guest is going to be Forrest Gamble of the Thrive Movement, if anybody's familiar with that. So that should be an interesting show 2 hours from now. Well, today our show is dedicated to the intentional permaculture community of La Ikea. And our special guests today are Donna Willoughby and Gabby White of La Ikea in beautiful Hawaii. Donna, are you there?
I am. And so is Gabby.
Okay. You sounded like you were having too much fun when we connected earlier in the week there with all that sunshine.
Yeah, we are blessed with usually the right amount of sunshine and rain for our off-grid systems.
All right, great. I think I'd like to kind of start with the history, maybe how you got started, whose idea it was, how did you get together?
Great. Well, the land has a little different history than the people that ended up on the land. The history of the land is a German woman saw the movie, Bill Mollison's Global Gardener movie, and she decided that she wanted to give a gift to the world, and the gift to the world would be to teach people permaculture. And she came up and bought this particular piece of land, and it's about 25 acres, and she started a permaculture teaching center here. And she ran the center for 12 years, and she was putting a lot of money into the center, and she had to hire managers and teachers, and she kind of wore out on the project. And at that point, that was when we bought, I think there were, how many of us originally? Seven folks came together actually through a group called Network for a New Culture is where we all met, and we came together as a group that wanted to do intentional community and live in a more sustainable way on this piece of land. We bought this piece of land together, co-bought the piece of land.
So then when you bought the land together, how long did it take before the group of you who networked, did you know each other prior to networking?
We did. Some of us had a history of maybe 5 years of knowing each other. We had not lived with each other.
Okay.
But we had a history of working together in events put on through this Network for a New Culture. So we were friends. We were friends and had some pretty intimate knowledge of each other.
Okay, that helps. And so it made it a little easier in decision-making on how you wanted to set up the intentional community, or how long did it take you to actually make some decisions on how you wanted to...
Well, we did some things that if you read Creating a Life by Diane Christensen about intentional communities, we probably did some things a bit quickly. You know, we bought the land a bit quickly and basically had a very short period of time to decide that we were going to buy the piece of land, or it was going to this particular piece of land, because it was going to be gone. We didn't have all our agreements together, but we were blessed with one person that had a lot of experience living in community almost his whole adult life. I would say it was paramount that we have his knowledge. And then we were blessed with also some really skilled people like counselors and, you know, people that we have one woman that said basically she prepared her whole life to live in community, to learn how to love other people and, you know, of course, not be in judgment. And we do operate at this point by consensus. So,
And I think we'll get into some of that a little later. At least I would like to. So it sounds to me like it's paramount that, you know, in starting something, you don't necessarily have to have all your I's dotted and T's crossed, but it sounds to me like you guys had an intention to start an intentional permaculture community, and that's what really got you moving. Is that true, or...?
I'd say the intention and the skills and knowledge of and the quality of the people that we started together with.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I would say an average group of people that had not been exposed to the skills and the knowledge that we had, it would be really tough. Really tough.
Right. So were you already in Hawaii when you all decided to do this venture, or were you on the mainland?
Some of us were in Hawaii, and some of us were on the mainland. I had just finished a 21-year career with the U.S. Navy, and then I had floated around to other intentional communities for 2 years, living in community, learning, and trying to decide where I wanted to put roots down.
Okay, great. So you pretty much did like a tenants in common with the purchase, or did you have to go through any kind of zoning laws?
Originally it was tenants, joint tenants or tenants in common, and then we switched to, we're now an LLC, and the land is owned by the LLC.
Okay, so is it like an agricultural land trust set up, or?
No, we haven't formed a trust yet. Mm-hmm. We kind of are partially a nonprofit, but not completely yet, and it's a limited liability corporation is how the land is owned.
Okay. Gabby, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Aloha.
Aloha.
Now, you are coming back, is that what I understand, to the community as a intern?
Yep. Yes, well, I'm going to be doing work trader / trial membership. I had come here about a year and a half ago doing a fall internship, which is a month long. We had a smaller one. It was 4 individuals. Usually but sometimes they have up to 10. This upcoming one, I think, has 12 or 13. So I had spent a month here practicing permaculture courses, taking courses on what I think is very integral, which I hadn't experienced at permaculture in both Anchorage, Alaska, as well as upstate New York, Ithaca, co-counseling and nonviolent communication. The people part of permaculture hadn't been explored so much in the other places. So here I was amazed at those disciplines, and it was extremely effective. So I took those courses. We also learned about Hawaiian spirituality, and we got to visit wonderful spiritual places like the ocean and warm ponds and play with the members and see really how they work, as well as working the land. So I went away back to Alaska, and then I'm coming back now.
Oh, great. And so you, you know, one of the things you mentioned typically, I mean, when people talk about sustainability these days, it's very material, talking about buildings and you know, whatever. And I notice, I think in your community, you focus more on the social aspect of sustainability. Can you explain, either one of you explain a little bit about that?
Sure. Donna, do you want to start? You start. Okay. Well, I think what makes it difficult to speak to the people part of the people care is that it's not something that you can go up necessarily and touch. You can't touch the waters. You can touch the water cistern, but how do you touch love? These are really strong emotions that we have that I think the American culture doesn't teach about. I can go to college and take a class in sustainable architecture. I can't go to college and take a class on sustainable heart culture. That doesn't exist. So when I came to Waikea and I saw that there were people who were trained in co-counseling and a counseling that admires that each individual has exponential potential, that they have all of the answers inside of them, that they value the process of working through troubles between people or troubles within ourselves. I think that's the number one thing, the problems within ourselves that we need to, conflicts we need to work out. It's pivotal, absolutely pivotal. The community part of the sustainability movement that needs to happen, or that if it happens, you know, what I think would benefit us all. Try to take the word need out of things, or have to. Just look at the benefits of things is very important. So that's what I think is that, to sum it up, is that it's difficult unless you're part of a group and you see it, see the love, see the scared, see the hurt, see the joy within yourself. It's never going to be a solid something to touch. It is ethereal. And the ether supports us in our atmosphere. We don't talk much about the sky, but oh my God, you know, that's a big element. Hard to put your hand on a cloud. Donna, do you want to talk about your perspective?
Yeah, I've learned so many lessons. I mean, as I said, I had a community in the Navy for 21 years before I joined this community, but I'd say that the self-growth process, I learned more in the first couple years living in community about myself, and as Gabby said, how to open my heart, how to be a loving person. And the first couple years, and I had my entire life of living in Main Street, in the mainstream world. And that's pretty profound because I'm 61 years old. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm old enough that you would think I would have. And living in a communal situation lots of times in the military and then traveling around in communities. But when you're really faced with people every day that need to make decisions together, get along together, open their hearts to each other, be transparent about what's happening inside them, be non-judgmental and loving about, you know, what's happening in the rest of the people in the community. I mean, it can be very challenging and very intense. And I would say, like I said, without the, we have tools that we use. And Gabby mentioned nonviolent communication, co-counseling, but we also even have tools that we use. We have every week we meet and we do a heart share. It's different than a business meeting, completely different. And it's about being transparent and developing intimacy with the other people in the community. And we have tools that we learn from a community in Germany called ZEG and other communities. So, you know, other communities. I think there's a Morehouse University that has some transparency thing, just books and tools that we use when we get together to really help us in the process.
Sure, that's great. So you could use more than nonviolent communication, NVC. You want to explain a little bit about that, just kind of briefly, how that fits in?
Nonviolent communication?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, instead of, let's see, why don't you say something nasty to me? Say something that would hurt my feelings, or that would be that I might feel sad or angry about.
You know, you just stepped on that row of carrots that I just planted. Now the seeds are all over the place.
Yeah, well, if I were, NBC divides it up into jackal and giraffe. If I were a jackal, said, well, you shouldn't have planted them there anyway. That was a stupid place to plant those carrots. Or if I was a jackal going inside, I would say, God, I really did mess up. That was really stupid of me to step on those carrots. You know, but the NBC way is, wow, Kaz, I hear you're feeling upset. Or you don't, the street way would be, so Kaz, you're upset because I wasn't, maybe your need for me to pay attention to where I was stepping wasn't met. And I'm feeling, you know, I'm feeling kind of sad that I didn't notice them being there. So that would be like the giraffe turned in and out. The giraffe turned in was, wow, I'm feeling kind of sad that I didn't meet your need to be attentive to where the carrots were planted, and that you're feeling kind of upset that I stepped on those carrots. So in other words, I'm not blaming you, and I'm not blaming myself.
So you need to give me a little empathy.
You're having feelings and you're having needs, and I'm having feelings and I'm having needs, and both of them are fine.
And you're taking time to give yourself some empathy before you can give me some empathy.
Exactly.
Is that the going through the jackal and then turning it around?
Well, the jackal isn't even necessary. I mean, if you're in an MVC mode, I would just initially go, "Wow, I'm feeling sad and a little bit of pain that I wasn't paying attention. My need for I'm not sure if the word's attention. My need for
care wasn't being.
I just wasn't. And then I could, go into you. You're frustrated because you want respect for the work that you put into this garden. I'm guessing.
That's true.
This is about good, but there's lots of bigger things.
So now I would ask you, would you be willing to redo this role with me?
Yeah, let's do it. When do you want to do that?
Well, that's great. And then,
but the thing is, I do want to say that the process of NVC, I mean, the goal and the intention is to connect at a heart level. And I personally have used the NVC process to beat somebody over the head. So what is really important when you're using any of these tools is to first look inside and go, whoa. I mean, like, that's where co-counseling comes in, yeah, Gabby?
Yeah.
Because if your emotions are flying, you're not able to, you're not wanting to connect at the heart, you're not able to connect at the heart in that moment. That's when you need a good counselor. That's why we have co-counseling instead of running out and paying $300 an hour for a good counselor.
Yeah.
We have counselors right in the community that can help you release and get to the root of what's going on with you, so that then you can hopefully get to the place of being present for that other person.
Well, I could half imagine when you have people coming through for training or internship or just for a week. I forgot what you call it. I know Marion and myself, my wife Marion and myself, we had the opportunity about 3 years ago to spend 3 or 4 days at your community. And we engaged in some work, and I remember that every morning there was a check-in. And I would half imagine, with a lot of different people coming through on some of your programs, that you have, does everybody plug into the peer counseling and the nonviolent communication, the NVC and the heart-to-heart peer counseling, or how do you actually,
First of all, you don't need to know NVC. The other person doesn't need to know NVC.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about you. Because the co-counseling and the NVC are all about you.
Mm-hmm.
But, so the interns, as Gabby said, they do. And that obviously was an important piece for her of permaculture that she hadn't been exposed to other places, it sounds like. So, but, as far as the people that float through the first few days, if we have, if any difficulties come up, certainly we can use these tools without them needing to even know what we're doing.
Okay. I'd like to backtrack a little bit and just kind of get into a few ethics of and principles of permaculture. We don't have to cover all of them, but I'm curious, when you first purchased the land, one of the principles of permaculture is observing. And, and what were your observations? So did you have to rebuild anything there? Was everything in order when you got there, or any special designs that you instituted, or was it?
Definitely, we've redesigned quite a few things, and we were blessed to have quite a few things already here. It seems like, for us at least, observing and then, changing is just a work in progress. It's constant. It's constant. you know, observing the plants and deciding what they need, observing our trees, our orchards, and deciding how best to take care of that. You know, just we have actually he's right here with us. Bernie's our German engineer, and he's super good at observing more of the what kind of system? More of the engineer type systems and tweaking those. Like right now, I'm looking out at our huge water catchment tank. We live on lava, so that we don't have running water. We depend on rainwater, so mm-hmm. that had to be. We had to get the water. You know. Well, we observed that the first year we were here, we had a dry spell and the water catchment tank ran out. So that was easy, not too hard to figure out the water. We needed more water catchment and it needed to be up higher. But, I mean, there's a system that Bernie has put in place so that I can look out this window and I can see how much water is in our water catchment tank. So I know if I can take a long shower or a short shower.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's before, the water catchment tank has a cover on and you'd have to get up on a ladder and climb in there to see how much water we have. But, you know, just it's constantly everybody, I think, in the community is observing. And as a group, when we come together, we can decide how to make the systems work better. We all have our areas of expertise, but
yeah.
Then we bring it to the big decisions we bring together to the group, and we all create the best way to do it.
Okay. So, Gabby, the difference, when you were up in Alaska, were you gardening or doing any permaculture up there?
Yeah, we had about 30 active members in the Anchorage permaculture community. When I got there 3 years ago, it had just started. So it was just blooming out, and they had their first PDC a year ago. We took on the Alaska Food Challenge, much similar to the 100-mile diet, and that was what I saw as to be, besides the PDC, the most permaculture thing to try to do, because if you can get your food system down, that's just really important. So that was pretty amazing. About 12 of us went on that challenge, some of us being about 90% of our diet and others less, doing what they could. But to find sources and to start supporting Alaska-grown products was really important. I think about 1% of people in Anchorage eat 1% of their diet is local, which is amazing. You know, as Alaska is portrayed as the place where there's lots of fish and caribou and moose, and there are those things that have been over-harvested. But, yeah, so I definitely did my own garden and at my house, and we were doing some community gardens with the group and trying to expand people's awareness of front yard gardening and as well as community gardens.
So what's the biggest difference you see there? And I know one of the principles of permaculture is to make the least of a change for the greatest effect. And, you know, there's definitely different climate things there in terms of, well, just to give you an idea in terms of how compost breaks down compared to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Where you guys are at there, is there a lot that you have to do I know one of the things that I've heard about is hygge culture, where you can bury logs and whatnot into the ground and then put, you know, different organic matter on top of that and build up, you know, your earth. And there, I mean, you cut some branches off, and how long does it take before they break down without even having to put any organic matter, combine them with organic matter, or do you?
Right.
In the cell.
Yeah. Well, to answer your question, what's the greatest amount of change you can have, the least amount of effort? Mm-hmm. I think the change is in our minds. I think the change has to come, number one, from population. If you want to look at sustainability in any land, the first thing is population and how much resources are we drawing and how much are we giving back and how long will it be until the land is depleted, if ever. So not that collectively Alaska or Hawaii are looking at that on a state level. They're not. It's not something that's in our purview. But I think that's the first thing that would have to be looked at, because when you're talking about the most amount of benefit, in Alaska there's actually a lot of things that grow.
right there. But it's a matter of people having a job, then not enough time to harvest those things that grow right there. Dandelion root, awesome for you. Does it take time? Sure does. Do you have time? I don't know. What else do you have on your plate? So, there's an amazing amount of things that are wild that grow that you can ferment. Willow, plantain, chickweed that grow. You don't even have to plant them. Forget hugel culture. You know what I mean? It's like they grow right there. That's the least amount of effort. Same thing in Hawaii. There's things that grow very easily. Guava, bananas. You don't have to do too much to get them. So I think that's the, on a high level, that population is the first thing. And then second, it's what already grows in nature that I don't even have to tend to that can give me a large amount of nutrients and benefits from it. Food, medicine as well, maybe shelter and fiber. So, that's my perspective.
Well, thanks. I was going to head in that direction, too, about perennials and foraging and whatnot, but I think I really like the point you brought out about it really does take a conscious effort to be more sustainable in our society. So thanks for bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
If either one of you throughout this conversation want to bring anything up, feel free to just come up with a topic. I'd like to take a quick break here, invite anybody that's listening. We have call-in numbers. There's an 888-627-6008. Join in on the conversation. Another call-in line would be 530-327-7602. Well, I would like to bring in children. I know you have some young ones over there in the community. And I'm curious how...
We'd love to go get them, but I'm not sure how much the Yeah, we have two lively ones right now, a 3.5 and a 4-year-old.
Okay.
Gabby's actually going to go see if they want to say hello.
Well, how do you find everybody? I mean, are there some, when people come in for internship programs and work programs, that do they interact with the children pretty good? Or having to deal
absolutely.
With people that might have?
Children, both of the children have grown up with people.
Okay.
You know, one was born in the room next to where I'm sitting, and the other one was born close by. And so they've been in this environment since birth. So they're quite people friendly, and you know they're getting little strong personalities now. They have their favorite people and what they want to do and how they want to do it. So it's a blessing, and it's also, as Gabby was just saying, some of it is consciousness, but some of it is simply time. And even here, we're at the point that we could be 100% food sustainable off our land. I am quite sure, at least. Let's say maybe 12 people, but it's a matter of changing how, first of all, the effort. It is way easier to put a couple cups of rice in a pan and cook it than it is for me to go out and, let's say, well, let's not even count growing, but harvest the taro, clean the taro, cook the taro, make the taro. It's not like rice. It doesn't just, it's instant, kind of there.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, taro has oxalic acid in it. It has to be cooked for a long time. We use a hot box so that we don't have to use propane. We're not sustainable yet in how
mm-hmm.
we cook. We use propane.
mm-hmm.
So it's, again, how the effort, that extra effort that it takes, like Gabby was saying, to do that. And, some cooks, even here at Lakea, some of our cooks are willing to take that extra time and effort, and some of them, they're going to make the rice, and we still have rice. I mean, we're talking about doing a month that we only eat off the land and some local foods that aren't on our land, because we do barter and we go
mm-hmm.
to a local market. So we're talking about maybe even having an internship, that's all we do. We only eat off this island or off our land, but right now, we're not doing that. Some of us have done that, like Gabby did in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
But at the current time,
would you Yeah. When you go to market, you mentioned that sometimes you barter, so you just go
We have a lot of friends. You know, Hawaii is this very interesting microclimate place. Mm-hmm. We live at 1,200 feet, and we have friends that live at the ocean. Like, coconuts barely produce or don't produce where we live. We love mm-hmm. coconuts, so we go down to the ocean where people grow lots of coconuts, and we do trades and barters and, you know, harvesting. We do guerrilla planting and plant things, you know, that need to be planted where nobody's there, and we also harvest things where nobody's harvesting things. So,
so how do you do your guerrilla planting?
Well, when I go with anybody that's harvesting coconuts, I take sprouted coconuts and I scatter them in places that they'll grow, so there'll be coconut trees where there were not coconut trees before. Well, all of our avocado pits we take out on roads and we throw them along the road so that avocado trees will come up. Avocados are not true to seed, but some of them actually do produce okay, even though it might not be the greatest tree. It'll still be avocado trees. Mm-hmm. And we do that with fruit seeds, too.
Great. Yeah, I imagine down there, I don't know, from what I understand, you can throw anything out the window and it'll grow.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. So I know this guy that where he lives, the city put in all these pear trees that have pears that you can't eat. So one time mm-hmm. late at night, he went out and he grafted a whole bunch of different pears on each one of the trees that were along this block.
Oh, wow.
So he can't wait till next year to see what happens.
Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, that's... So getting back with the children, so do you have different policies then about raising children? Or
we do. We have about a 3-page childcare policy. It's basically, do you want to talk about it, Gabby? She hasn't talked for a minute. Do you want to talk about it?
I don't know this well.
Okay. It's basically allowing the children to have all their emotions and to release them in a way that probably isn't completely typical of the way children are usually raised. It doesn't mean that we allow them in any way to be destructive or violent or hurt each other, but we really encourage them, if they're having a feeling, even if it's anger, that they are encouraged to, somebody takes them and they're encouraged to release that feeling and not hold it in. And if they want to cry, obviously, if they're in a public space, we might not want them crying there, but they're encouraged to go elsewhere. And we usually have plenty of people, so someone can go with them, and they can cry all they want. They can scream and cry all they want if that's what they want to do.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be the parents. It could be anybody in the community.
Yeah, and oftentimes it seems that it's not the parents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had episodes when they were little that first the boy wanted to bite we have a boy and a girl, was doing some biting behavior, and, you know, so there were feelings that came up on both sides when somebody got, a lot of times. And a lot of times the parents, you know, they had big-time feelings. They probably needed to release at the same time, so the parent was not the appropriate person to deal with all the feelings that came up. That seems to be over now, and now that particular those episodes are over, thank goodness.
So do they ever join in when you meet as a group, for instance, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. a check-in or that, does everybody, including the children, join in?
Yeah.
In other words, I guess what I'm trying to get at, do they speak up as adults? And
they're starting to. They are.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to have their own little check-in. And it's been funny, since they were, about 18 months old? They were so cute. They'd go in the little room next to where we do the check-in, and we're all eating breakfast and checking in. They'd go in the little room together and say they were having a meeting. They're such little imitators, and they'd sit there and, you know, do their little discussion, even though they were barely verbal. And I asked the 3-and-a-half-year-old here, do you want to say something else?
Say hello.
Hi. Is there somebody who am I talking with?
Who is that? What is your name?
Try again. Say one more time.
Go ahead. Hello.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Mm. It's a Hawaiian name.
For? You know, I never did ask you, what does that mean? What is a Hawaiian name for what?
Is a name that came to me in a dream. Actually, this is Ayala's mom, Tracy.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
Hi.
While I was pregnant with her, the name came, and I found out later from my Hawaiian hula teacher that it means like the way or the path towards food. So I thought, okay.
Did I hear you say it's the way or the path towards food?
Uh huh. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. So might have a cook there, huh?
Yeah, a cook. Or actually, she already knows what she can eat and what she can't eat, and she can like wild forage and stuff.
Great. And I want to just take a real quick break here to see if there's anybody listening that has any questions or any call-ins.
I'm here, Jim.
Okay. And who's this?
Sheridan.
Hi, Sheridan.
Hi.
How are you today?
Great. It's windy here and cold.
Yeah. I know. I live right down the street from you.
I know. I'm your neighbor. We practice NVC together every week. It's fun.
All right. Did you have any comments or?
I wanted to ask a question.
Go ahead.
Okay, I just wondered how many people live there and what their living situation is like, if they share a building or is it a common building like an apartment house or a condo, or is it kivas, or what's the design of their living space and how do they share space?
Who wants to answer that?
And
thank you. Is it Sheridan? Thanks for asking. We do have 25
acres. Shall I hang up now?
And it rains. We get about 150 inches a year of rain, so substantial amount of rain. And when we first got here, we inherited from Beatrix, the lady that owned the place, one large house. And I guess there were two smaller houses. And then some what we call Quonset huts that are little kind of huts. You know, the interns and the people that live here temporarily definitely need some place to be dry. So we have a common kitchen, and we have common meals. The number of people ranges from 10 to 20 most of the time. Like when this internship group comes, there may be closer to 30 for a while. And we just had an event where there was even more than that. But typically, we're not having any programs, there's around 10 to 15, probably on average. So we found that the people that live here permanently all the time really need to have a place that you can shut the windows and keep things dry. We recycled one house from a housing development. It was going to be bulldozed, and it's a beautiful space. And then Biko and Tracy, one couple, just built a really nice, they used cordwood and tried to use some sustainable building, but they also have, so all of the members at this point have structures that can be closed off from the humidity and rain. You know, the interns and the people that stay here temporarily are in more, like, screened areas that can't be. I mean, they can stay dry, but the humidity can come in. So.
I would love the communal cooking aspect, and I'm wondering if you cook raw or vegetarian?
We have two members that are completely raw, so we try to always have raw things in the meal. Most meals have. You know, we have huge salads from our garden, huge salads. And, one of our members makes sprouts all the time, so that we have sprouts. And And we have lots of raw fruit, of course. So. Avocados. Pretty fairly easy to live raw here if you really want to. Unluckily, the taro, which is what sustains the Hawaiians, that about they say 70 to 80% of their diet was taro, cannot be eaten raw. So.
Right.
Mac nuts. We have mac nuts. They're raw, so we have a lot of raw things.
Do you cook too? Do you eat meat, dairy?
Oh yeah, we're pretty eclectic when it comes to our food, because we really want people to be able to nourish their bodies in the way that they feel is or they want to. So unlike some of these communities that are just based on. There's a community down the road based on the 80-10-10 diet, and that's all they're supposed to eat. Well, we have we have pigs that are wild that get into our gardens, and they are in a very humane and loving way. We sacrifice those pigs for our garden sake, and also we eat it. We eat the pig, pig stew with taro, like the Hawaiians did, and we have chickens that sometimes need to not have quite so many chickens, and we have sheep that mow our orchards. The orchards, when we first got here, you couldn't even see the orchard trees because of the weeds and the nitrogen-fixing trees were bigger than the orchard trees, and the sheep now go into each of the orchards and graze, and so we don't have to use fossil fuels. And the sheep, you know, it's an art to keep the right amount of sheep and keep them healthy, and so sometimes we end up with more sheep than we need, and so we also, meat eaters eat some of the
sheep. You mainly sacrifice.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know.
Oh, how fun.
We have to take care of the land, and we have to take care of the sheep, and we have to eat, so it's what each element has multiple functions would be the principle. The sheep definitely have multiple functions. They fertilize and they keep our orchard cleared and they provide us with meat and milk. We've milked them before.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. That was very fun and informative.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening.
Okay,
thanks
see you
thanks
around,
for calling
Jim.
In, Sheridan.
Bye-bye.
You mentioned something about, you know, you eat the taro and you eat the pig just like the Hawaiians did.
Mm-hmm.
And I know part of permaculture also is not changing a cultural area where you're, when you come into an area like that. So are you tuned into that at all on some of the cultural aspects of Hawaii, the way it was? And
yeah,
I'm not quite sure what I'm getting at.
I think we're definitely tuned into that, and are we capable at this point of doing it the way they did? Probably not, but they had I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Awapua. Anyway, they divided the land into pie-shaped triangles that went from the high up mountains down to the sea, because of what I just talked about the microclimates in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the each tribe had land in every section. You know, they had the whole slice of pie. And so we do that in a way in that we have friends and external community, you know, not the Lakea members, but we have community members that, what's the word when they're, you know, yeah, that are still part of our tribe, but they're located in some of the different growing areas, and that's why we barter with them. We can grow things up here that they can't grow down there, and they can grow things down there, and obviously the ocean is down there, which we can get salt from, and we can get fish from. So, and even the water, sometimes I bring the water up for our gardens. So, yeah, that's how we try to model a bit after that model, which is how the Hawaiians did it.
Terrific. So, one of the things I want to go over is a couple of your different programs. You have let's start with the work exchange program.
Mm-hmm.
How is that set up? Is it, and if somebody wants to visit, are there certain times of the year when you allow that, or
actually, we take guests any time of the year, so they could just email our website or give us a call. The number, phone number's on our website. Probably the best thing would be to email us. And any time of the year, they could be, you know, kind of a visitor guest, that they would pay a little more and not have to do any work if they chose just to be a guest. And another, you know, then you talked about the work exchange. The work exchange program is $12 a day right now to help with the food crisis, because we do grow all our food or buy all organic, and anything extra in Hawaii is outrageously expensive, like the coconut oil and olive oil that doesn't come from here, which we still tend to use in our meals. But all you have to do is apply. There's an application. It's been a work in progress for us to really be able to connect the right people with La'akea. You know, we're getting much better at selecting the people that seem to be the people that would really be a fit and really benefit from being here, and that we would also benefit from them being here. So we're getting better at that. So there's an application on our website that they could get and then become a... We don't take work exchangers for less than a month. We take guests for one night. So the work exchange program, if you're going to... You have to commit to a month. And then we have two... we have the internship program that Gabby talked about. And the next one, we have one that starts this week, but we have... The next one begins July the 4th and goes to August the 1st. And that is also just, you know... Email us and let us know that you're interested, and that includes the permaculture classes, the community living skills classes, and the co-counseling classes. And then we also do permaculture design courses. We have one coming up March 3rd to the 19th, if anybody's interested in a really fun, wonderful permaculture design course with on our land with lots of hands-on immersion experience.
So being a more of a tropical climate, do you find a lot of people taking the design course locally, or do you do get people from the mainland?
Mostly people from the mainland, to be honest.
And
yeah, you know, as you know, the principles apply to any climate. So
okay, yeah, so you're mostly going with principles for the design as opposed to, you know, crops and what grows best.
Yeah, and Bernie just put a little, I don't know, do you want to talk to you a little bit, Bernie? I'm going to let Bernie talk to you for a second. He's one of our eldest, wisest member, our 81-year-old member, who's Bernie.
Hello, my name is Bernie. I grew up in Germany on a farm. I was born 1930. I just turned 81 and a little and a half a year. And the reason I joined La'akea about 3 weeks, 3 months ago, and I'm sorry, three years ago. And the reason why I got into La'akea, I also knew Donna before, is that I am very concerned about the end of fossil fuel that we are facing, that nobody really wants to deal with. And here in Hawaii, on La'akea, it's a possibility to live off the land, what grows here. When the rest of the world collapses because there'll be no more fuel for vehicles, for fertilizer, for pesticides, for insecticides, and everything else. We are facing a lot of difficulty in the next 10 to 30 years. And I just was corresponding with somebody from NASA, and the NASA is focused on outer space and building a rover to send to Mars. I mean, are they expecting to find oil on Mars, and how are they going to pipe it down here? I think they are barking up the wrong tree. They're dancing on the Titanic as it is sinking. So I have a good background in farming, but my focus became when I was 8 years old, my father bought the first tractor. Until then, we had been farming with horses. There's an article about this in the current issue of Communities magazine. And I became very interested in machines, and so I became an engineer. And after I graduated, I came to America technically most advanced country at that time in 1953. And looking back on my life, I feel I was shanghaied into being a foot soldier in the Industrial Revolution that led to the destruction of the environment. So I'll stop here and I'll let you ask some questions.
Well, it sounds like you're real grateful for being in a sustainable community. And how is have you found this a little different gardening, you know, and growing in Hawaii as opposed to Germany? I'm sure you did, but are there some methods that you were able to bring from Germany and your background to Laeke?
I have not contributed much in farming itself, but contributed a lot to fixing machinery.
Okay, you're the engineer. You're the engineer.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I think I can fix anything inanimate under two conditions, enough time and motivation.
That's great. Yeah, I would like
to... I've been building cell phone amplifiers because they have a poor reception here. Installed a super-duper solar power system on my cabin and stuff like that. And mostly I'm having fun doing it.
Okay, terrific. So I would like to we have about 5 minutes left, and I'd just like to run by you the consensus decision-making process. So I'm not sure who would want to talk about that.
Ask us a question and we'll see who volunteers. What do you want to know about it?
Well, I guess my biggest thing is in consensus, let's say you have somebody that just does not want to cooperate for whatever reason because they can't get their way, you know. It's not fitting their paradigm.
I would love to tell you a quick story to end this. I was very embarrassed for the first few years that I lived here because we had a member that we seemed to, you know, it's so important in consensus that you have a common vision, that you're all headed in this, you know, you have a common intention and vision for what, where you want to go. And we, one of our core members that we didn't know very well, wasn't as well known to all of us as the rest of us were known to each other. We couldn't move forward. It seemed like when we said something was red, he seemed to think it was green. When we said it was green, he seemed to think it was red. And we actually had to have facilitators to help us through our consensus meetings. And we ended up asking him to take a sabbatical. And then he came back and we tried it again. And we ended up parting ways, like a divorce. And it used to embarrass me. Gosh, we know MVC, we do coke. Well, some people do coke. And it's like, why can't we be loving, non-judgmental individuals and get along? But, you know, we didn't. And when I talked to other communities, people that had lived in community and been in community, they went, wow, that's so awesome. And I'm like, what? That's awesome? Yeah, because you were able to see that it wasn't working and change. And I think that's a good way to end the program because it's the same with your garden, the same with your orchards, the same with the people, to be able to adapt and accept that, you know, this is, you know, to flow with what is working and be able to, you know, look and say this isn't, so we need to flow a different direction. And that, you know, that could mean that any of us might leave. Or, you know, it can mean that we might, you know, change the garden to something. You know, we're constantly in flux and constantly looking to try to create more love and more care for each other and for the land.
Well,
and
that can take different things. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a beautiful wrap on the show. I appreciate you, Donna and Gabby,
mm-hmm.
for joining me. And this has been terrific. I really enjoyed this show. A lot of fun, a lot of good topics.
Okay.
Could you just give out your phone number and your email address or your website address for for anybody listening so they can connect with you?
The phone number is 808-443-4076. Got that? And our email is, our website is www.permaculture-hawaii.com or La'akea, LA'AKEA. And what's our email? I don't email it. It's okay. It's the same thing. The email is la'akea@permaculture-hawaii.com.
Terrific. I hear somebody in the background, so you're all...
La'akea, @permaculture-hawaii.com. That's our email. And the web is www.permaculture-hawaii.com.
Okay, terrific. Yeah. Well, thanks again. I'll be in touch with you as a follow-up. And that's it, folks. That's the show.
Okay, bye.
It was a pleasure talking to you. Aloha and mahalo. Mahalo from Montana.
Okay, bye.
All right, that's it, folks, for the week. Join us in 2 weeks, February 11th, for more Table Talk with Kaz, when our guests will be Ian Lodge and Bridget Butler from Cal Earth Institute. And that should be a very fascinating show. It's all about building structures and shelters out of the earth that you stand on. Also, I may be bringing in a partner to do a biweekly show dedicated to farming practices with permaculture, just to do a little bit more on the physical end of permaculture. So it's in the works. We'll see if we can make that happen. And we're going to cover everything from permaculture and the material parts and aspects of our consciousness awareness to care for people, care for earth, and share surplus. Thank you. And go to bbsradio.com/permaculture project/for any weekly updates and topics and guest list. Adios.